From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 25 years ago today, the summer of 1999, with a new film hitting movie theaters. It was the story of three student filmmakers, Heather Donahue, Michael Williams, and Joshua Leonard, who hiked into the Black Hills near Burkittsville, Maryland, to film a documentary about a local myth known as the Blair Witch. The three disappeared, their equipment and footage discovered a year later. The purportedly found footage is the movie that the viewers in 1999 were seeing. The film was called The Blair Witch Project. It was fiction. But a rumor campaign spread across college campuses. The film might be real, an actual documentary project, and then maybe the students were never found. Could that be true? Well, of course, it wasn't true. Who would believe that? Maybe me. I was a college student in 1999, and when I went to see the film, here's what I knew. A lot of people my age were debating whether this was a real doc, or partially real, or based on a real story, or just pure fiction. No one seemed to know for sure. Isn't that bizarre? That would really never work today. But in 1997, the filmmakers hired three unknown actors, trained them in how to use a handheld camera. The entire film's budget was $60,000 to shoot it, just under $200K in post-production. It's almost nothing. $250,000 to make this movie that grossed $250 million worldwide. It was a huge hit at Sundance, and then 25 years ago this week, it was released nationwide. And yet somehow the filmmakers were still able to confuse the audience about what was real and what wasn't. Roger Ebert loved The Blair Witch Project. He wrote, quote, "At a time when digital techniques can show us almost anything, The Blair Witch Project is a reminder that what really scares us is the stuff we can't see. The noise in the dark is almost always scarier than what makes the noise in the dark," end quote. Does it have a legacy? Film critics might point to other films that revived the found footage technique. The actors say the legacy of The Blair Witch Project is they never really got paid. But I want to go back to what Roger Ebert said. We never really see the Blair Witch. Our mind has to create the monster. So why are filmmakers today so intent on showing us everything? The supposed scariest movie of this year is Long Legs, although critics might debate that. And I wonder if it's taken the lesson that we don't need to see every detail to be truly scared. Our guests have a lot to say about that. Let me welcome Ben Scrivens, president and CEO of Fright Rags, back to the program. Hey, thanks for making time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Tell people what Fright Rags is.
So we create horror merchandise. Been doing this since 2003. We create t-shirts, hats, lounge pants, anything horror, collectibles, that type of thing. So
great to have you back here. Thanks for being with us. Matt Pazentino, film critic for City Magazine. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Vanessa Cheeks, co-founder of the Anomaly Film Festival.
Hello, hello.
I think people know what Anomaly is, but tell people what Anomaly is.
Anomaly is a genre film festival based here in Rochester. This year will be November 6th through 10th at the Little Theater, but we show all the new and independent horror and genre movies that you haven't seen yet.
There you go.
Yeah.
In 1999, I was 20 years old and was reluctantly going to see The Blair Witch Project because I didn't really like the Halloween movies. As our guests know, I'm not a big fan of stabbing. You know, I didn't need more stabbing in my life then or now, really. And I didn't know what to make of it. But there was, I mean, I guess I was reading that there were 25 colleges where the filmmakers of Blair Witch, they screened it before it went nationwide. And they got this rumor campaign going on college campuses like this thing was real. And it's just weird that, I don't know, Ben, if you remember all that time.
Oh, yeah. So I was 22 at the time. And interestingly enough, I had stumbled across BlairWitch.com, which had come out. It was months before. I know it was before Artisan picked up the film. It was before Sundance, all that. I had stumbled across it, read about it, and thought, is this actually real? You know, just like everybody at the time, it was like, wait a minute. Is this an actual thing that happened and now we're going to see it in film? And so I do remember, and I don't remember if it was that website or another website that was talking about it. You could find out if it was fake or not by highlighting the text. They did black on black. So it was like, if you keep reading, if you want to find out if this is real or not, you can highlight the text and essentially spoil it for yourself, which is what I did because I had to know. And I did find out it was fake, but you know, the marketing campaign with that website, and I know Artisan, I think they took it down and then they put it back up later when the movie came out. If I'm not mistaken, I could have that a little bit wrong, but it was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was the first time the internet was used to basically market a movie in that way, at least, you know?
Yeah. And maybe it says something about the American educational system that I couldn't figure it out. Like, maybe it says something about me. But that what Ben is describing, I remember that very well. It was a lot of people talking to each other like, have you heard about this? Like, is this like a real thing? And like, why would that be in a movie theater? Like what kind of foolish person am I? But, you know, I guess maybe that was part of the fun and our brain wanted to believe it. You know, Vanessa is much younger than me. So when's the first time you saw The Blair
Witch? I was just doing the math. So I was like, how old was I?
Oh, God.
I was like 11 or 12. And so when it came out, and I distinctly remember my brother's girlfriend, like we watched it with her. I don't think I watched it around that time. I think it was like when it came out or something like that, like on tape. But I remember watching it with her and going like, oh yeah, this is real. We had woods behind our house. I was terrified. Yeah. The marketing around it was right. Looking back into the film, it got me thinking about like all the urban legends that you hear in school. And it's just a miracle how every school, no matter where across the country, has the same, like, somebody in some class has seen Slender Man and somebody somewhere got kidnapped by, Bloody Mary after saying her name in the mirror. So this was kind of right up there with it.
I know. It's like there's a ghost in the woods or, the camp I grew up. The rumor was the boy in the dock, not based on a real story. Somebody created that story, haunted me for a long time as a kid.
The white lady down by the lake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So this was like taking on those ideas and somehow convincing a large population of viewers that this time it might be real.
Yeah, it could have been.
What is with our brains?
I'm not convinced it's not, but whatever.
Matt, maybe we just wanted to believe something that was interesting and fun like that at the time. When did you first see The Blair Witch?
Probably not till high school. I definitely remember renting it from the library on VHS. And I thought it was terrible.
You think everything's terrible?
Hold on now. I was about to say that was a terrible opinion of a high schooler. That was a very uninformed, terrible opinion of a high schooler because I did watch it a couple weeks ago and I was like, oh, you know, this movie's cool. And it's just like one of those movies that I just wish I saw in theaters because we don't get these word of mouth phenomena. I mean, there's just no way to have a secret movie like this. Like, is it real? It's just, there's no way. I mean, you go into a movie now and you just know everything that's going to happen before you watch it. Yeah. And, you know, this is the year of Sixth Sense and it's just, we just don't have these phenomenons anymore.
Yeah. When Blair Witch came out, it was second only to Runaway Bride at the theater, although Sixth Sense did come out and, crush everybody. By the way, there was a really interesting profile on M. Night Shyamalan written in The Atlantic this week that kind of made me change a little bit of how I view M. Night Shyamalan.
I've been watching all his movies this week because his new one comes out tomorrow.
That's Trap, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. Trap. Okay. So, listeners, if you want to share your recollections here, if you want to laugh at Ben and me for kind of believing that maybe this was a real thing, we're so old, Ben.
I know.
We're older than everybody.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's okay. 844-295-TALK. What is the scariest movie you've seen this year or recently? 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@wxxi.org. I think we got a clip from Blair Witch. We do? We have a clip? So we're going to listen to a clip, and it's probably the most famous clip, but if you haven't seen the film or it's been a while, again, the idea was three filmmakers, these students, they hike into the woods, they're investigating this, the legend of the Blair Witch, and things start steadily going wrong and then wronger and then wrongest. And at this point, Heather, in the middle of the night, is filming herself. And everything has basically gone wrong and she feels like they're going to die. And she is apologizing to everybody because she did not realize what they were getting into.
I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. And I'm sorry to everyone. I was very naive. I am so, so sorry for everything that has happened. Because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault. because it was my project. And I insisted. I insisted on everything. I insisted that we weren't lost. I insisted that we keep going. I insisted that we walk south. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up. And it's all because of me that we're here now. Hungry and cold and hunted.
Yeah, it scared me. I was scared. I was a very scared 20-year-old. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to read a few emails. They're going to back me up on this. Ben, nothing scares you though, right?
I mean, this... So, just to tell you a quick story about how I saw this movie, because it did freak me out. We were going the first night of the premiere to see it, and it was sold out. And I was like, oh, that sucks. We'll go tomorrow night. I woke up the next day. I went to my mailbox to check the mail, and I had been part of these like forums that we were trading stuff. And I had this mailer in the mail, and I was like, oh, this feels like a tape. And it was a blank VHS tape. And I was like, I wonder what this is. And I popped it in, and it was Blair Witch Project.
You watched it? Oh, that's how you get sucked into a TV. That's crazy.
So, yeah, I put it in there, and it was because I had been talking to somebody online, and we were trading stuff or whatever, and this is back before torrents and stuff. You were trading tapes and other things, and he had mentioned something on Blair Witch Project, and I didn't think he actually owned it, and he had sent me a copy of it. So I watched it on VHS when it came out, before I saw it in the theater.
Alone?
I did that with one friend of mine. So that bugged me a little bit that night because I had woods at the end of my street too.
See? You're
and so, I did go see it in the theater, and it didn't scare me as much in the theater as it did at home. I think seeing it at home was a much better experience than seeing it in the theater, personally.
Well, that was also the first time you saw it. Okay.
True, true.
And I'm with Vanessa. Like, haven't you seen like The Ring or Poltergeist? Like, you are fully getting...
You got to have a healthy fear. And that ain't it.
You can't just get like random stuff sent you in the mail and you put it in. That's how you get cursed.
It's worth a shot.
I'm pretty sure that's what happened in Long Legs, although I'm not going to ruin anything here because Vanessa hasn't seen it because you thought it was about a spider.
Yeah, somebody somewhere said something about spiders and I just blocked out
It's not
rest.
Daddy Long Legs.
Yeah. I wasn't going to risk it. So,
I mean, Daddy Long Legs are like barely even spiders.
No,
I hate spiders, and I could
Here's
have no trouble with them.
This episode is about the Blair Witch Project, so I don't want to derail us because I will go at length. A spider is a spider, okay? We don't need to talk about my phobias. I just want to be clear. It's a spider.
Okay.
Okay.
Including Daddy Long Legs.
They got legs.
Yeah, all right. So, listeners.
They got long legs.
Listeners, fill me in on this. Is that an actual spider? I think maybe it is. I don't think they can bite you is part of the thing. Did you hear about those Joro spiders that were coming up, those colorful ones that were supposed to
be? The ones that fly around?
Yeah.
I'm on alert. Don't worry.
We had a whole episode that I want you to listen to about how they're invading your life. They're not invading anybody, and they can't even really bite you anyway. Does that help?
No.
Doesn't help. Does not help. Okay. Matt Pasentino, as a film critic now, you listen to this. What is remarkable to me is they did find three basically unknown actors, and there were plot points that they had to hit. They're filming in the woods, but a lot of that is improvised. And from what I'm reading, the filmmakers kind of messed with them at night. They kind of withheld food. They, kind of did spooky sounds for just when the crew's trying to sleep. And so some of what you hear from Heather Donahue there, obviously she's acting, but she would later say like they were pretty, psychologically messed up. And I don't hear like a novice actor there. What do you hear?
No, she's great in the movie, and it's kind of interesting, we're talking about the 25th anniversary, and, I had just watched it a couple weeks ago, and for the first time since high school, and, this pretty legendary movie that is, they don't really have that high, they're not that fond of the making of this movie. I mean, there was just an article in Variety maybe a month or two ago, and, I mean, the three actors, it was really kind of the first time they, in a long time, teamed up and talked about, like you said, they weren't paid and, it was not a...
How can this movie make $250 million and they don't get paid?
They weren't even allowed to work because after that movie because they didn't want them to... The filmmaker studio, I think it was a studio, didn't want them to think the audiences to think they were alive. So they like weren't allowed to go to festivals, and they weren't allowed to go. They weren't allowed to take other jobs. Like, it kind of like derailed potential careers, because I think she's more memorable than the two guys from even just watching it a couple weeks ago. And she wasn't really allowed to work, and has since obviously left Hollywood and changed her name because she doesn't want to be really associated with the movie.
That's very sad. I don't know what a contract looks like. You know, maybe they got paid a small amount to shoot this film.
A little bit.
Right? Yeah. But what I can't believe is, if I'm the filmmaker and we're going to spend an absolute minimum, like a literal shoestring budget, and it becomes a $250 million worldwide hit, I can't believe I'm saying to the actors, that's too bad you signed that contract. Guess you're not making any money. Now, maybe that's up to the studio. Maybe not even the filmmakers, right? Because they sold the rights for $1.1 million to the studio. It goes to Sundance in January that year. It blows up. And then for $1.1 million, a studio buys it. And maybe the studio's like, yeah, too bad. All the money is ours. I guess you're nodding over. That probably is what happened, isn't it, Ben?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what happens, because the studio is taking the risk by buying it for $1.1 million. They don't really have any – they don't have to give – them anything
but after additional. $100 million, can you kick $1 million apiece
sure.
to the actors?
Yeah, I mean, that would
can
be
you do it?
Nice, of course.
Did you read that Variety article? I think they got fruit baskets.
Yes.
Literal fruit baskets.
I think she might have said they
something
got
like that,
fruit
yeah.
baskets.
Good gracious.
You know, they're unknown actors, so it's not like they know how to negotiate back end points and all that.
I'm just talking about basic humanity.
Oh, no, for sure.
100%,
but
yeah.
You're ignoring basic greed. So.
But in
Hollywood?
I can't believe
in
that.
La La Land?
I can't believe
mean?
That. Let me read a little bit of feedback, and then we're going to talk to all three of our guests about what makes a movie scary. Mark says, Evan, I saw the Blair Witch Project at the Little Theater during a thunderstorm, where from time to time the theater was black, but the thunderclaps hit almost as on cue. When I got home, I didn't realize how affected by the Blair Witch Project I was until I heard a twig snap while I was trying to open the door. It was a while before I would sleep without some sort of light on or do laundry in the basement after dark, which looked like the basement in the movie. The ending of it. Part of the genius, he says, of the movie was the marketing hype before the movie came out. That buildup, as if the movie was a documentary of a real incident, definitely helped with the anxious mindset going into the film, even though I knew it was fiction going into it. That's from Mark. Mark, you can't do laundry in a dungeon basement. I mean, that's almost as bad as getting something in the mail and just opening it.
And just opening it up. Ugh.
You're inviting doom, aren't you?
My first, when you read that, I was like, okay, get a new basement, because that sounds crazy.
Get your basement finished so the Blair Witch cannot get there.
Exactly.
I mean, it seems pretty basic to
Ghosts
me.
Don't like clean basements.
Yeah,
it's
you
a
ever
fact.
Seen Freddy Krueger in a super finished bougie basement? I don't. Probably not.
Recessed lighting? No.
No. He loves the recessed lighting. Joanne says, I remember signs posted around Central Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts. They seemed to be advertising something mysterious and real. I did not actually see the movie, but the signs were scary enough for me and made an impression on me, something I remember more than 25 years later. That is from Joanne. David says, me and my wife watched Paranormal Activity. Right after it was over, I turned to my wife and asked her if she believed in demons. And the glass on our entertainment center shook and fell off. We were thoroughly freaked out. That's Dave from Irondequoit. Are you laughing, Vanessa?
The demons believe in you, so.
Doesn't matter if you believe in demons, Dave.
Demons don't like glass.
Exactly. Okay. Again, another fact.
Yeah. Oh, listeners, we're talking about the scariest movies you've seen, the experience you've had, if you saw Blair Witch, if you believed it was real. It's 25 years ago today that Blair Witch Project was released nationwide after this build-up campaign, and dupes like me went to the theater thinking it might have even been a real documentary. 844-295-TALK, if you want to call the program, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@wxxi.org. I want to read again, and I'll start with Matt Pasentino, our resident film critic for City Magazine. Roger Ebert said about Blair Witch, it's a reminder that what really scares us is the stuff we can't see. The noise in the dark is almost always scarier than what makes the noise in the dark. End quote. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's nothing more unsettling than ambiguity. And I mean, you know, you said you don't like slashers, and we know that. But I love Halloween, the first one. And
The original John Carpenter Halloween.
Yeah. It's not a scary movie.
It's not even all that stabby. It's a little stabby.
It is slower than people might remember.
Way less stabby, though, than the modern iteration.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, something to me that's I've always said is maybe like one of the more unsettling scary movies I've seen is The Shining, because you have this big open area and three people living in it. And it's just you don't know what's around the corner. I mean, the mood and atmosphere is what unsettles me more than Jack Nicholson taking an axe to a door. So I think I agree with good old Roger about, you know, it's what you don't see, what you the unknown.
So let me just press on Halloween and on The Shining, because those are interesting examples. First of all, one of the great scenes in Halloween is where Jamie Lee Curtis very foolishly thinks that she has somehow killed Michael Myers, or he's like unconscious. And so she's turning and basically facing the camera, because it's a great idea to take your eyes off a serial killer. And he's like on the floor in the room behind her. And then you just see him slowly come up, and then he turns. And you're like, well, this is really, it's just not going to work out very well for old Jamie Lee Curtis. But what was really scary about the buildup to that moment, I mean, it was a great scene where he kind of sits up slowly and does the whole serial killer thing. But you know that's coming.
Yeah.
In your brain, you can see it before it happens, because there's this empty space and her eyes are not looking, and you can already fill that in. It's almost like you didn't need it, even though it was a great scene. And when it comes to The Shining, you're talking about a place that became the horror, because your brain is filling in all these details about these long hallways and these scary looking old rooms, and it's kind of messing with you that way. I don't know if an elevator full of blood or an axe through a door was scarier than what your brain was doing to
you. Exactly. I mean, we're watching over, you know, a 2 hour and 20 minute movie. We're watching, you know, Jack Nicholson slowly, or maybe not slowly, descend into madness. And I mean, that's, you know, that's like you said, the hotel's turning them. And I think that is what's this just big open, it's quiet like that. That's more unsettling than, you know, the blood elevator. And
did you like the axe through the door scene?
Oh yeah, I love The Shining.
Okay,
I love The Shining.
But to you, again, great scene,
iconic scene,
sure,
great moment.
But it's not.
But
like,
that's not the scary part of The Shining.
That's not the
yeah.
That's the crazy part of The
right.
Shining. Yeah, yeah. Okay, Ben, what makes for something scary? Is anything scary to you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, when I first had kids, I couldn't watch anything with children in it, like movies I'd seen 100 times, Pet Sematary, Cujo, all those, anything with a kid in it that was either in harm's way or got harmed, I could not do it, because it hit me too close. Mm-hmm. Like, now that they're older, it's much easier to dissociate myself from that, but it's still there. So things like that, like real world things, but just to echo what you guys said, I mean, yeah, it's the unseen. I mean, the good examples of Halloween, that's my favorite movie of all time. So that and The Shining, which is one of my favorites as well, they're slow burns. It's a lead up. It's not, it's, you know, when they made Halloween 2 and John Carpenter was contractually obliged to write it, he actually came in and they shot other scenes with more kills because he said it needs more blood, because at the time in 1981, that's where the direction the genre was going, especially the slasher genre, you know, subgenre of horror. But what makes Halloween so effective is that it's a bloodless film, and it's the slow burn, it's the lead up. Look at Jack Nicholson and The Shining, like you guys just talked about. Like, it's that, it's nothing's happening in the first 5 minutes. It's all building up to the end. So you're it's the anticipation. It's almost like it's Christmas morning, right? Like, the lead up to Christmas is better than the actual payoff of getting the presents.
The
know?
Shining and Halloween is Christmas morning.
For me, yeah.
For I mean, Fright Rags, it is.
They're comforting movies to me. I don't know about you, but they're...
Now, hold on
a
second.
Literally
hold on a second. What is comforting about Halloween?
Oh, everything. Everything about that movie is like a warm blanket.
Comforting?
Absolutely. 100%.
Did we watch the same movie?
Yeah.
Did you like watch like the one with Meryl Streep and it was just like a chick flick?
I saw it when I was 4 years old in the network television premiere when NBC put it on. The Friday night movie in October 30th, 1981.
That's probably not a term, by the way, for a movie I should use. I probably shouldn't. I was just thinking of like, I'm trying to turn genres on their head here. I've never heard Halloween described as comforting.
Oh, yeah.
So what about it?
It's because I just love that movie so much. It's like ingrained in me. You know, certain movies you've seen
but
so many times.
But liking something is different than saying it's comforting. Is it comforting because you know that the danger isn't real and it can't reach you?
Yeah, obviously that's part of it. It's just, I just love everything, the music, the atmosphere, the people in it, everything in it just feels like old friends that you're watching on the screen.
Wow. Yeah. Such an interesting way to describe Halloween. Yeah. And I haven't seen it in a while, but you're saying there's not a lot of blood.
There's no blood in that movie.
In the original Halloween. I mean, there's kills.
Yeah, there's kills, but there's no blood.
Yeah.
The last time I watched it, I really keyed into more how it's like a family drama more than it is like a horror movie.
Okay, now we're getting really weird. This hour. We're getting really weird. But I did not know the John Carpenter story from 1981 with a sequel. Mm-hmm. He saw where that industry or the genre was going. And again, I'm the guy who's not a big fan of stabbing. Part of why I don't really like horror movies is you get away from the psychological horror of Halloween, a lot less blood or no blood.
Yep.
And now a lot of them seem to be competing with how creative or kind of grisly the kills can get. And I know that that's kind of a subgenre that people kind of like, that there's people who kind of root for the weird and but that's just not me. But that's a totally different movie to me than what Halloween
was. Also focused on his background. After so when John was supposed to write part two, he's like, there's nothing more I can do here. Like, the Halloween series was supposed to be every movie a different story that takes place in Halloween. It shouldn't have been Michael Myers every sequel. But when he was contractually,
which is why Season of the Witch was
exactly.
What it was.
Exactly. But when he was he was under contract to write part two, the famous story is he sat down with a six pack of beer and said, what am I going to do? You know what? Let's make Laurie and Michael brother and sister. And that's really where it went. I love the Halloween franchise, don't get me wrong, but that's where it just went wrong, because in part one, the scariest part about that is it could happen to anybody, anywhere. It just happened to be Laurie Strode. She was not connected to him in any way. He went back to his hometown, he went to his house, she dropped the key off because she had to drop it off for her dad, who is the realtor. He saw her and keyed in on her and followed her and her friends and killed them. That can happen to anybody. But as soon as they're related, it doesn't matter. I'm not related to Michael Myers, so I'm not getting killed unless I'm hanging out with his, niece or something.
That's a really smart analysis.
And that's what all of the sequels focused on, and it became more about a family drama almost than it was about a killer stalking people.
In the same way that J.J. Abrams ruined the Rise of Skywalker by making Rey, I'm not even a big Star Wars fan. I just know that I can't believe they took the very interesting Ryan Johnson.
Yeah.
His premise that Rey was could have been anybody, and the Force could belong to anybody, and some random kid in the galaxy could have it. And J.J. Abrams like, no, we're going to make her a Palpatine, and we're going to make this person a Skywalker, and only a few select families have this power. Well, then now it's not everybody's story, and you're just limiting, the whole universe of fun here. Yeah, it was terrible. Somebody's going to email me and tell me
what
that's
wrong. I was
going to
say, you're really opening up a can of worms.
I thought that was universally understood that movie was a disaster, but maybe not. All right,
we'll
Vanessa,
see.
Are you a Star Wars fan?
I am a Star Wars fan, but I like the older movies.
Yeah, because
the original
because J.J. He ruined it.
No, I just like
bad
the
person,
ones.
Bad decision. No, I don't
please
know
don't
J.J.
Associate
I'm sure
me with
he's
whatever
fine.
Evan is saying. Okay, I just thought it was, don't email me, email him.
I just thought it was bad decisions on storytelling. All right, so what is scary to you these days?
Spiders.
Here's the thing, though. I feel like I am a very broken person in this conversation because, to me, I don't really find many things to be scary or at least like unsettling in the way that the Blair Witch Project was unsettling. Like, you took it home. I watched it and I laughed through the whole thing. I thought it was pretty funny. I just thought it was
Wait a
weird.
Second. You laughed?
Yeah. Like, so I was watching it with some friends and they're like covering their eyes and I'm like, oh, wait, watch. And so, like, I don't necessarily find scary movies that are supposed to be scary very scary, but what does get me, what really like stresses me out, is like Final Destination. I cannot watch those films because it gets me in a way that I just can't even enjoy the movie.
Why?
Because it's like ghosts. They can happen to you at any time. You can die at any time. These people are just making stupid decisions, and that's what gets me. Uncut Gems scares me.
Adam Sandler?
I know.
Is that a horror movie? Is it?
One,
is it a horror
no,
movie?
It's not. But it's like one dumb decision after another. And it just stresses me out in a way that I will think about it for weeks and months afterwards. So, and like the ghost at the beginning of the Ghostbusters movie, but the new one with Kristen Wiig, scared me for weeks. I had to sleep with the light on. I don't know why. I have no idea why.
The 2016 Ghostbusters.
Yes.
That was what
terrified me.
But Blair Witch.
No.
Comedy.
Not a blip.
Funny.
Yes.
Laughing.
Hysterical.
But isn't your brain allowing you to get scared in the way that Heather and the two guys in the woods are getting scared? You're not seeing the Blair Witch. You're hearing the horror, and your brain is laughing.
Because to me, they're getting their comeuppance. They shouldn't have been there in the first place. You know what I mean?
Some bad decisions.
This is what you get.
Logical result.
It's why I love Aliens. It's just, you're doing something you're not supposed to be doing, and this is what happens. And so
you're rooting for the aliens.
I absolutely am, every time.
Are you rooting for the Blair Witch?
I'm not rooting for the Blair Witch. But again, I would never find myself in such a ridiculous situation, because I would walk in and say, not for me. Gotta go.
Let me ask you what would happen if a VHS tape came in the mail to you.
It'd stay in that box. I tell you what.
Hey, risk reward, you know what I'm saying?
I would open it and I would say, interesting. Clink.
Yeah. And then your mailbox would say, 7 days.
Exactly. Oh. Tampering with somebody else's mail is a federal crime, and I'm not dealing with that. I'm sorry.
Real quick before we go to break, let me ask all three of you, scariest movie of all time for you? Single scariest movie?
I don't know.
Halloween's your favorite movie, Ben. Is that the scariest movie?
I was going to say Exorcist, because that is still effective. Mm. As much as I'm not like completely freaked out by it, it is still effective to me. But
I'm kind of with Vanessa that, like, I hate to be like, nothing really scares me. But like, when I first saw The Shining, that was very unsettling.
Ghost Ship is good.
Ghost Ship is not good, Vanessa.
It's so good.
Juliana Margulies would tell you that's not good. I think she was in it.
Yeah.
Wow. Ghost Ship?
Yeah. You even know what it is?
No.
Exactly. It's good.
You never go in the direction you never go in the direction I expect. I will say that. So we got Exorcist. We got, do you say The Shining?
Mm-hmm.
Shining. Ghost Ship.
I want you to watch it.
Vanessa's like, I'm going with Terms of Endearment.
Yeah. I Know What You Did Last Summer is pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have to take our only break, and we're going to come back to some more listener feedback as we talk about what foot films scare you these days. It's 25 years ago today that The Blair Witch Project was released. It was not a real documentary. Some of us were led to believe it was. It was quite a viral marketing campaign in the early days of the internet. Couldn't do that today, but we're talking about some of the legacy with Ben Scrivens, president and CEO of Fright Rags, Matt Pasentino, film critic for City Magazine. Nothing scares him, and Vanessa Cheeks, co-founder of the Anomaly Film Festival and a big fan of spiders. We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, a community devastated by a mass shooting at Maplewood Park this past weekend. What we now know and where we go next in our first hour. In our second hour, local business associations and neighborhood groups have teamed up to promote their part of the city of Rochester. They're highlighting different events this summer and what makes their part of the city special. We'll talk about what's going on in the Southeast. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get Roy in Rochester on the phone. Hey, Roy, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Evan. Actually, I ought to admit that I've never seen the Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
And so maybe part of my issue is I'm a different generation or something.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, yeah, I saw Psycho as a first run, Rear Window, God knows what. But I'll have to agree, she did say something, Aliens. I think I put a hole in the ceiling of the theater. I think I cleared the roof in one moment. But I saw Long Legs, and I don't know what the critics were thinking. Were they just tapping it out on, no, they didn't use a typewriter, I know that. But I couldn't find what it was they were, their gems in what it was.
In the movie Long Legs,
Nicolas Cage's prosthetic hair and face are among the ugliest I've ever seen.
Hmm.
I'll have to hope for better things to come.
Well, so Roy is talking about the new movie that just came out a couple weeks ago called Long Legs. Stars Nicolas Cage. It is a horror psychological thriller. A number of critics have said it's one of the scariest movies in years. They said that it is dread from start to finish. Vanessa thought it was about daddy long legs. It's not. It's just long legs, no spiders involved at all. But Roy said he saw it and he just doesn't see it. So Matt Pasentino, Long Legs. How does it do?
I didn't love it. I thought, you know, everyone's praising Nicolas Cage. I'm like, gave a very Nicolas Cage performance.
Hey, watch it.
Right. Whoa, we got
There's
Nicolas
no
Cage.
Nicolas Cage slander in this room today, okay?
Nicolas Cage fan over here.
Have you seen Ghost Rider? Another fantastic film.
Oh, stop it.
Late career Nicolas Cage or early career Nicolas?
All career, except for Face Off, which is the only one I don't like.
Face Off is a great movie.
Terrible.
Wait, you like a movie and it's Face Off?
I love Face Off. I haven't seen it in a long time, but...
Okay, all right, so...
Long Legs is okay. I mean, like, the atmosphere and dreads there that we talked about, and that's always effective, but I think it doesn't work for me. I don't think it all comes together.
What's the biggest flaw or failing of Long Legs?
I kind of think the last act, it just is kind of a mess, and the way they try to tie everything up, it almost seemed a little too neat for a movie that was...
I was going to kind of echo that. It's the one thing I didn't like about it was it seemed too convenient.
Way too convenient.
It took me out of
the loop. Without spoiling, you're saying that some of the story explanations were too pat?
They fit together a little too nicely where I was like, oh, I didn't really expect that. And I agree with the last act. I mean, I loved the sense of dread. Yep. I loved the way it was shot, and I thought Maika did a great job. I like Nicolas Cage. I actually didn't expect to see as much as we did of him early on. That's not really a spoiler. I'm just letting you know. But I agree with you. It was convenient, and it was done by Anthony Perkins' son. So the guy Roy mentioned Psycho, and it was his son that made it. But yeah.
Okay, so are you going to see Long Legs?
He turns into a spider in the end.
No, he doesn't.
I swear to God, if I get there and there's spiders, I will freak out. I will probably see it when it goes to streaming. I'm really reserving my theater time for Trap and the new Alien Requiem.
All right, so let's talk Alien.
Or Romulus.
I want to get back to Trap, but Dallas writes to say the trailer for the new Aliens movie looks like a dumb slasher movie, and I have liked all the prior ones, but I'm not going to go see this one.
It's a dumb slasher
Part
movie.
Two is a dumb
the
slasher,
slasher
movie.
Is an alien, and you just don't like to see a woman succeed. So I'm just kidding. But like, they are slasher movies in space.
Yeah, but like, I've had enough of the aliens, so time to move on.
But it looks a little like a return to form. I think it takes place prior to the second one, if I'm not mistaken. It's at least around the same time frame. Because the thing is, Alien is an amazing movie. It's slow burn. It's creepy. Aliens is just an action horror movie in space, which is amazing. And then, I mean, let's be honest. 3 wasn't bad. 4 goes off the rails.
Yeah, 4.
Prometheus tries to not be an alien movie, but it is. You know, it's definitely
not. Like, why fight it? Why fight what
exactly.
you are? Just do it. It's fine.
And what was
Covenant.
Covenant, yeah.
And then Alien versus Predator, which I would... consider an alien movie. Yes.
Alien versus Predator. We had Freddy versus Jason. There's nothing that they would not do to get that dollar out of your wallet.
And I would watch it.
You're gonna go. You're
as long
give
as the studios
money.
Own the IP.
Exactly.
Put them together.
Put them together.
Long Legs versus.
Yeah, right.
I'll have to see it first to determine. Yeah.
But the new aliens, new aliens. You're excited.
Oh, absolutely.
Ben, you're going.
Oh yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
Matt. No.
I mean, I'm going, but
you're gonna go.
I'll see it.
He'll pout the whole time.
Excited.
He'll be there.
You're gonna go, so that was the first part of that. What was the second film that we were just? Oh, it's Trap. So M. Night Shyamalan's new movie Trap comes out tomorrow. This week. The premise being, one of the stars is his daughter. By the way, she plays the pop star who's kind of like a Taylor Swift type of pop star, and the protagonist in the film.
Josh Hartnett.
I was going to say Bradley Cooper. The character's name is Cooper. Josh Hartnett is a dad. He's trying to connect with his daughter, his teenage daughter. He's bringing her to the concert of this pop star. But when they get there, they find out the place is kind of crawling with police, agents, detectives, FBI, whatever. And they're looking for a serial killer that they believe is going to be there. And so they're trying to spring a trap. And I think this is a case, I'm sure there will be other twists, but I think the twist is already revealed here. I think they put that in the trailer, right? We all know the twist here, right?
Do you?
Yes, I think so. I think it's literally in the trailer.
What is it? Go ahead, say it.
I keep putting my head down when the trailer plays because I heard it gives away too much.
The dad is the serial killer. And he knows.
Yeah, that's,
so
yeah,
we know that. Yeah. That's not a spoil.
No, it's not.
Right.
So his daughter doesn't know this, obviously. Right. And he's wrestling with, how do I get away from this police sting that's designed to trap me as a serial killer? But also, how do I bond with my teenage daughter who's so, you know, just we need to connect in some way. It's an interesting little interplay there.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are Shyamalan twists. I will say again, I read the profile on him in The Atlantic this week, and I really enjoyed it. He talked a lot about how hurt he was and how damaged his career was by The Village. Because Sixth Sense comes out, and of course, it's iconic. Yeah, and it sets the standard that he has to deliver some crazy twist in every film. Unbreakable comes out. It's pretty successful. It's not quite the same level, but people like it. Signs comes out, kind of same thing. It's like, okay, you know, maybe not loved, but liked enough. And then The Village came out, and it was like, whoa. People did not like The Village. The critics did not like The Village. He was kind of hurt by some of the he was a kind of a meme, a joke. And Lady in the Water. Then he said he put his head down and he's like, I'm doing what I want to do. And he didn't listen to anybody. And everybody's like, Lady in the Water is terrible. And you're getting really out there. And it's really kind of a dirge. And he did it anyway. And he's like, he still likes it. But, you know, his whole career went in a different direction. He's trying to get back to doing what he wants to do and not feel pressured from the studio or pressured by reputation. So I don't know if there will always be a big M. Night Shyamalan twist. Matt, is it okay? Can you see a Shyamalan movie and not expect a twist? Or is that...
There will be a twist.
There will be a twist. Okay.
It's... I've watched...
His daughter is the killer.
I've watched...
Who knows?
All his... Not all, but up through his real bad period of needing a paycheck with After Earth and The Last Airbender. I've watched them all this week. So I just watched The Village a couple days ago.
What did you think? Is it still bad?
It's terrible.
It's bad.
It's terrible. Okay. And our pal, Scott Pukas, he said, it's his masterpiece. Or maybe that wasn't him.
I think Scott likes The Village more. But,
so, yeah.
But Scott is damaged. And we love Scott. We love Scott.
So The Village, there has been a reclamation project for The Village that I will not sign on to because it is not good. But Lady in the Water is even worse. So, I mean, because he had that run of three movies. Signs was the last good one. And then he went on the Village was kind of the downhill. And then he really didn't start coming back up until the Visit in 2015, which was okay. And Split was okay. I liked last year's Knock at the Cabin. And I thought that was his first good movie since Signs.
And that really didn't have a twist. Because it led you to believe one thing. Well, you were left wondering what was going to happen. And you were left thinking there would be kind of a twist, but it kind of plays it straight. Which I
You're right.
Which I enjoyed about it because it was an M. Night movie and I was waiting for something to happen. And I don't keep up with every single movie he's done. I've seen a bunch, but not all of them. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. He can do a movie without some major twist because I was waiting for it.
How do you feel about M. Night Shyamalan?
I have no strong feelings. I do have strong feelings regarding Josh Hartnett, and I'm super glad that babe is back. So
he's the one who did I always confuse him with?
Channing Tatum the last
Channing
time.
Channing Tatum, yeah. Josh Hartnett and Channing Tatum, I feel like, are the same person.
What?
Yeah, thank you, Matt Pasentino, for remembering. So Josh Hartnett is back, but has he ever left if we've always had Channing Tatum?
I could see that.
Thank you,
Ben.
I could
see that. Not mop hair Josh Hartnett, like modern Josh Hartnett.
Ben Scriven's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I see it.
No? You're not seeing it?
They're two different people.
All right. Well, I know they're two different people. I've never seen them together. I assume they're different people. But Josh Hartnett, you're a big fan.
Big fan. Huge fan. Yes. Yes.
So that will be interesting to see what the twist is. Matt Pasentino says there will be a twist.
That trailer tells you there's something's going down
there's
at that concert.
More.
There's something going down at that concert.
Yeah.
Especially because they do give away that he's a serial killer right away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the plot of the movie. So it's like, okay, what else is there? Because clearly it's not just him running away from, trying to get away from them the entire whatever hour.
I just don't see M. Night making a procedural. And so something's going on, and I can't wait to see it tomorrow.
Even the vibes in the trailer are very of his style, where it's like creepy and eerie. And it's not just that the guy is a serial killer. It's even like the seem like the lead detective or whoever, the woman, she was like, there's something wrong with this woman. There's something going on there. So I'm interested to see it.
All right, before we let you go, the reason we got together this hour is because it's 25 years since the Blair Witch Project came out. And Hollywood being Hollywood, to the point that our guests have been making, there's Freddy versus Jason. There's Jason Takes Manhattan. There's Jason in Space. There's probably, you know, Jason on the set with Martha Stewart. Like, there's they'll do anything that they haven't done yet or that they already have done. So there was a sequel to the Blair Witch Project. And then there, I think there was a third movie. And I'm not even sure what happened with those, but I had no interest in those. Did you see those?
So I didn't see Book of Shadows.
Book of Shadows.
Book of Shadows. I didn't see that one. In 2016, there was a reboot that is terrible.
Awful.
It's so bad. And it's made by good people.
Yeah, because it's really bad.
They made a movie called The Guest, which I will always take an opportunity to shout out the movie The Guest. And
love that movie.
Very stabby. Mm-hmm. And but there has been an announcement that they're doing more Blair Witch.
They are doing more Blair Witch?
But I will say they are also re-releasing, Second Sight is re-releasing Blair Witch this fall, and it's the director's version. The Eduardo Sanchez and Daniel Myrick said that the version that Artisan released was not their movie. They cut it up. So this is the first time they're actually going to release, I mean, I'm calling it the director's cut, but that's basically what it is. It's the filmmaker's version of the film, and that's coming out this fall.
Are they doing it in theaters?
I don't think so. I think it's just DVD. But I did hear they, like you said, they are going to make and think another Blair Witch film.
And I mean, it's still 25 years later. I mean, we're talking about it. It's still, you know, the most interesting tidbit for me, because a couple years ago, the movie Tar with Cate Blanchett, she's on a run, and you hear a scream in the distance. That's Heather Donahue's scream from The Blair Witch, and she has come out and said, I mean, Tar is. This is not good business because, you know, she was not asked if they could do that, use her likeness like that. I mean, Tar's a masterpiece, but it's Heather Donahue.
I will say this. Any more they do with Blair Witch, here's what they should do. Pay those actors.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And there should be a fan campaign. This is not for me to say, but I'm surprised there's not. Pay those actors. Whatever contract they signed, they made a movie that they had to do a lot of work for. That made $250 million that became a cultural phenomenon. Pay those actors. You can afford as a studio to pay those actors and make good, I think, on a commitment. But having said all of that, I want to close with this. I'm very curious to see what a director's cut would look like, because there was a debate about how to end the movie without giving too much away for listeners who are going to go watch The Blair Witch Project. Early in the film, we heard a story about, you know, I think they called him a hobbit of some kind, or a recluse, and people dying in a basement. And the film ends up leading to this structure where, you know, something bad happens. You don't see it all, but they don't show you the Blair Witch, and you don't see blood and death at the end. You get a lot of assumption because of what they show you.
Mm-hmm.
Right choice, wrong choice. Did you want to see more? Or do you think, look, this whole movie is psychological.
You know, I don't think it's, and you'll see a lot in the text about this film. You cannot replicate it now. You would never get away with that.
Right.
So it was the right choice to push it into this cultural phenomenon that it is today. I think if you tried it now, maybe not. Like, there'd probably be a lot more criticism around, like, well, why, you know, we need to know. And there'd probably be a lot more chatter.
What does the witch look like?
Yeah, there'd be a lot more ways to talk about it, especially with social media and TikTok and all this other things. But I think it was absolutely the right choice.
Ben?
Oh, right choice. Absolutely. I mean, if you reveal too much, it's just not going to be as effective, and we probably wouldn't be talking about it as much as we are today.
Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you couldn't show it. It would have taken away the whole marketing campaign is this real or not? I mean, so I think it's the absolutely right choice.
All right. So Ben Scrivens is the president and CEO of Fright Rags. Where do people find you?
Just check us out at fright-rags.com. Find everything there.
Still having fun doing it.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Absolutely.
Having a blast.
Vanessa Cheeks is the co-founder of the Anomaly Film Festival.
Yes.
What should people know about Anomaly?
We have our sixth year coming up November 6th through 10th at the Little Theater and a couple other spots this year. But we are looking through films, and they're all looking great, so you should come take a look.
You guys are vetting? You're in the vetting process?
We're in the vetting process.
It's like the VP vetting process, but for you, it's the films?
But for us, it's like, yeah, shorts and features.
Shorts yes. and features, yeah. Very important choice coming up here for the VP and for Anomaly.
Yes, yeah. Pretty much on par.
Matt Pasentino, we find your work in City.
Yep, City. I have a review coming out this week of a movie that's starting at the Little on Friday called Ghostlight, and I think it's one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Is there any stabbing in it?
There's no stabbing.
Are there ghosts?
No. Family drama.
Ghostlight.
No spiders either, right?
Just check. Gotta be sure.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ben, Matt, Vanessa. Thank you for being
here.
Thanks for having me.
We should do this more often.
I agree.
I know. I know. And listeners, thanks for sharing your recollections, whether you were scared to go down into your basement or do the laundry or hearing a twig snap outside. Solidarity. I was with you there. Vanessa was laughing. I was with you there. And Ben was making bad choices about what he was finding in the mail. Hey, 25 years ago, it's been a long time. From the whole team at Connections, thank you for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.